This episode of Country Squire Radio is brought to you by Missouri Meerschaum, the Scandinavian Tobacco Group, Lane Limited, and thecountrysquireonline.com. We thank them for their support of this show, and we thank you for supporting them.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Country Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
Good evening.
Hey, Bo. Good evening, dude.
Man, good evening to you, sir. How you doing tonight?
You know, I'm doing well. We're just having some fun pre-show banter here.
And, as we like to do.
Enjoying ourselves. And, man, excited about a good show tonight. Been smoking my pipe a bunch today because it's been rainy and kind of slow in the shop.
Dude.
And so, man, I just... You know, what else is there to do in an old-fashioned pipe shop except just constantly puff on your pipe?
Hey, man.
It's been great.
It's a good day for it. Of course, we're coming off of a monumental week.
That's right.
Or I suppose weekend.
Hashtag 220, baby. February 20th.
That's right, man.
It's not 420. It's 220.
International Pipe Smoking Day.
That's exactly right.
And, you know, after you know, putting it out there that we were probably not going to do anything, in true form, we really didn't do anything.
I mean, we didn't. We knew we would talk about it. I personally celebrated International Pipe Smoking Day.
Oh, did you really?
I did by working in my yard all day with my Kamoi that I've dated. If I can date this, I've gotten closest to like the early 80s. It's an older Kamoi, but man, it just smokes like a champ, and it's my yard pipe. It's one of those pipes that everything in my house that I've either built or fixed, I've done while smoking this pipe with some type of Virginia tobacco. And this weekend was Christmas Cheer 2014.
Oh,
and, yeah, and it was great. I just spent all day with my Kamoi, and it was fantastic. It ministered to my spirit.
I'd love to hear that, man. Yeah, man, I spent the day up here at the shop. This was really great. We actually did a Periscope from the shop. It was me and actually Timothy. We did it together.
Yeah, because Timothy was here. Great.
Yeah.
That's good.
Man, I had a great day with Timothy, actually. We hung out a little bit and enjoyed some pipes.
Would expect nothing different.
Yeah, of course, man. It was fun. We had, thanks to everybody who was able to kind of log in, briefly for the Periscope we did. I know I had promised to do another one. And unfortunately, my buddy who I'd been waiting for to smoke Penzance was caught in the internet desert. And unfortunately, I never got a chance to smoke my Penzance.
Ah, the old internet desert.
Man, it'll get you.
Have you had it before?
I've not had it. I've got a bit that was a gift from someone who asked for a man nameless. And I've been hanging on to
it. Oh, yeah, that guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've been hanging on to it, waiting for the perfect time. I thought surely International Pipe Smoking Day would have been the great time to do it. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking now I've moved it to my birthday.
Okay.
Which is going to be a big day this year. So I'm looking forward to that. I'll have to smoke it then. I'll tell you what I was smoking though.
Yeah.
All right. This was the first time I'd ever legitimately tried to blend tobacco myself.
What did you do?
So I came up here.
I'm almost scared.
No, well, you should be. You should be. So, you know, last week we had this top three cherry tobacco discussion.
Yeah, yeah.
Which
right.
was a great discussion.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
And you know, we had this kind of joke about the Jar Jar Binks and the cherry tobacco. And you know, I believe it was Mark VV who even coined the phrase Binks blood. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to hashtag Binks blood. I'm going to see if I can like make this.
See if you could get it to become even more of a thing.
Well, you know.
Than it already wasn't.
I thought,
could be.
What if you just made a really like aggressive, like cherry tobacco?
Right.
And so I came up here and it, you know, as I was mixing it, Timothy looked at me and says, are you going to be one of these people? Who mixes their first ever tobacco and no matter how terrible it is, think it's going to be just God's gift to the tobacco world.
Yeah.
And I said, absolutely.
Absolutely I am. who do you think I am? Someone other than Bo York?
Of course.
It's going to be God's gift to the tobacco world.
It was terrible.
It's going to be fantastic.
It was awful. I mean, it was just absolutely, I won't get into my, secret recipe that I came up with. But it was this, a bunch of different cherry blends and then also, a lot of heavy Latakia, and I don't know if you know this
or
not.
Oh, that's, wow.
Latakia and cherry, they do not mix.
They just, they're not really fond of each other.
No.
Yeah.
But I did, the second time around, actually hit it with a good bit of Burley, as you like to say, the tobacconist's best friend.
That's right.
And it made it very smokable.
Oh, I feel like I've taught you so well.
Really?
It's wonderful. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Well done.
So maybe now I'm the apprentice.
Timothy's graduated, and you've actually kind of been demoted.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go.
And, not demoted.
Not demoted.
Right.
If anything, I was nothing.
You've taken on a new occupation. occupation.
I'll take it. Right. I'll take it. Look, I gave it a go, and it didn't turn out well. But I did smoke that terrible tobacco all morning.
That's pretty great. Yeah, it's funny. We've got a lot of feedback on different cherry blends, and we had a lot of folks say, you know, I don't like cherry blends except for this or except for that. Or, you know, it's like, well, I really don't like cherry blends, but if I was going to smoke one, this would be the one. And, you know, it's just kind of neat. Everyone's kind of got their own take on a cherry blend. But there, you know, again, as we talked about last week, there's that no other pipe tobacco out there that you really get the sense in which, like, that's what an old man pipe tobacco smells like, right, is a good cherry blend. You know what I mean? And so anyway, I think, you know, let's pay honor to the cherry blend. Like that's what gets a lot of the new pipe smokers into the door is the cherry blend.
Oh, absolutely.
So, we're very thankful for it.
Hey, one last thing about International Pipe Smoking Day before we move on.
Yeah.
Is, we got a lot of great pictures in. People were, tweeting in saying that they were smoking this or doing that. We got some people playing chess, smoking their pipes, some people out on the porch smoking pipes. A lot of y'all representing on International Pipes, Pipe Smoke a Day. And, we were definitely sure to retweet out and do that. So really, really, really glad to see that kind of participation from the community as a whole. So the Peterson event that also occurred.
We had a great time. Our friend Vince Jones from, Ashton, who, if you're unfamiliar, Ashton, Cigars, also distributes Peterson pipes and tobaccos for the United States. And, Vince came down, great guy, really good friend of our shop, comes through, very often, but, just put on a fantastic Peterson pipe tobacco show. We had every pipe tobacco from Peterson and Ashton, at the event for sample and for purchase. And so, you know, everyone tried a lot of those, probably had close to 25 people here. It was a great crowd, and, whole, you know, place was just full of smoke. I tried some Peterson tobaccos I hadn't tried before. Big fan of the Irish Oak from Peterson. So Virginia Perique, it's got a little unflavored Cavendish in there. It's kind of a, if I could compare it to something, it's like maybe our Pirate's Alley, but a little more full-bodied kind of thing. Kind of spicy. Really nice. Really nice. Sherlock Holmes tobacco is always really good. Irish Flake. We sold quite a bit of the Artisan Blend from Ashton, which is always a good seller here in the house. So and sold a couple of the Peterson 2016 St. Paddy's Day pipes as well.
Yeah, those are beautiful pipes.
They're really pretty. We have a couple left. They're not available on our website. You have to call us, but we have two left, and give us a shout if you're interested in those. But really pretty pipes, and yeah, had a great time. It was just a lot of fun. Good, lots of strong drink and strong conversation and smoking as is tradition here at the Country Squire.
That's awesome, man. I wish I could have made it. It sounds like it was a blast. Mm-hmm. All right, well, we got a blast of a topic coming up in our pipe culture series. Of course, you know, we from time to time like to take a look at pipe culture, the culture that surrounds the pipe. We've talked about origins. We've talked about some different things in terms of, you know, what are kind of the connected tissue that many pipe smokers share and to what they're doing while they're enjoying their pipe, or maybe what is kind of a reason why they like to go to the pipe in the first place. But
yeah,
we have a topic coming up actually next week.
Okay.
Which we're really excited to talk about, which is hipsters.
Man, bring out the big guns. Let's bring out something that everyone has an opinion on.
Oh yeah,
or at least a good joke. Hey, Bo, did you hear the one about how much does a hipster weigh?
How much does a hipster weigh?
It depends on how many Instagrams or something like that.
Wow. Wow. All right. So here's what we want you to do. Write in with your thoughts on hipster culture and how that either doesn't, whatever your thoughts are in terms of how it plays into pipe culture. We'd love to get those in. Send it in csr@podastery.com. We'll be reading off your thoughts, your comments from Facebook, Twitter, your emails. We'll also post something up to the Reddit page, the R Pipe Tobacco group as well. We love getting feedback there. So looking forward to sharing those thoughts with you next week. But this week, we're actually looking at a Hero of the Bowl.
Hero of the Bowl. We haven't done this in a while, have we, Bo?
Man, it has been a minute. And
yeah.
It's something that I think that a lot of people really enjoy, because what we do with Heroes of the Bowl historically is typically we take one individual from fiction and one individual from history, and we kind of discuss them as pipe smokers.
Yeah.
And also, you know, the impact that they have to the world around them.
Yeah.
Today, we're actually talking about somebody who has walked essentially in both worlds.
Yeah, we're kind of combining the two.
Yeah, he's a historic pipe smoker who is responsible for some of the greatest works of fiction.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and say it, of all time.
Yeah, I mean, particularly the 20th century, this is a person that, you know, as a short storyteller, a poet, even a playwright, but, you know, that's, you know, essayist and short storyist, we're all familiar, particularly from our youth. And we're talking this week about A.A. Milne.
Yeah, A.A. Allan Alexander Milne. Now, you probably, if you're like me anyway, you know him best from his works on Winnie the Pooh.
That's right.
And, you know, so I don't know about you. Did you grow up with Winnie the Pooh?
Oh, I grew up with the Pooh. I grew up with lots of Pooh. I did. Lots of Pooh in the Cole household. Of course, grew up with Winnie the Pooh. You know, he's just such a, kind of omnipresent character in American, you know, childhood or any kind of Western, Anglo sphere, you know, childhood, you know, upbringing. You've always got that, sense of, you know, what's going on in, you know, in his corner. And so, I was very, very present with him as a kid.
That's interesting. Winnie the Pooh and just kind of the series of books and then also films that go around that. Mm-hmm. I personally always associate with my grandmother.
Yeah.
Cause when I was growing up, we used to go to my grandparents' house. And, my grandfather would either read from Winnie the Pooh or we'd watch the movies. And the voice of Winnie the Pooh, like the original voice, kind of sounded like my grandmother.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, there's just this, ooh, I can't quite do it. And I feel like I just,
I think you should try again.
No,
right.
No. That was a bad.
You offended your grandmother. You offended British people. You offended bears. Like, you offended people that love honey. Yeah.
Right.
It's all a sham.
No, man. But look, Winnie the Pooh, obviously a great work. Got some great things to kind of point out about it. But first and foremost, we're talking about him because he is a pipe smoker.
Yeah. Yeah. Allan Alexander Milne, of course, this was an individual. He was born in 1882, had an extensive career, in, you know, literature and in storytelling before Winnie the Pooh. This, you know, it kind of as Winnie the Pooh stuff came along, you know, more into the 20th century. But, you know, all of his previous work was overshadowed by that success with Winnie the Pooh. It was just such a, you know, such a, prolific thing that just kind of took off with the imagination of children.
And seems to be the case
in Great Britain. Yeah. He of course served in World War I and World War II, became kind of a pacifist there in the interim between the two wars, which is kind of interesting. And then, during World War II, there was, you know, some things that he did to kind of help pacifism, but then also, you know, the pro allied British side, which was kind of an interesting, tension that he held there. But, he was a avid pipe smoker. It's funny though, because he very much was a pipe smoker and not a pipe snob. It's kind of fascinating that there's not a whole lot of information out there on, you know, Milne and what he smoked as far as his, you know, preferred tobacco and preferred pipe. If you look at, there's lots of photos of him smoking his pipe online, and you'll notice, you know, most of them are going to be straight pipes, billiards. There's a few pictures with him with just a real substantial Lavat shaped pipe, typically smooth finishes that, just look real stately and, you know, what you would think of from the early 20th century. But not a lot of information on what Milne smoked and kind of his preferences on pipes and this and that. There's the one main thing that if you've kind of hunted any of this down online before, from Milne is this really, really great, short essay that he wrote called, Smoking as a Fine Art. And it's a witty read. I mean, this is something that you would think of would come from a early 20th century British writer. You know, you think of these giants like Lewis and Tolkien that just had this real witty and kind of disarming way of talking about, you know, topics that, you know, whether big or small topics, they're just kind of have an interesting way of weaving it into something humorous. And Milne takes this entire, you know, essay, and he kind of talks about, you know, the joys of learning how to become a smoker, but then also being overwhelmed by all the people around him that, you know, you could almost call them the hipsters of his day,
right,
kind of like,
right,
you know, are adopting this as a rite of passage and a, you know, something you do as a status symbol. And, oh, well, I want to look different and be unique. And so I'm going to, you know, bring on this pipe. And he's really contrasting himself. And he calls them his old school of pipe smokers that, you know, actually smoke a pipe because they smoke a pipe.
Right. Right.
Rather than, smoking a pipe so they can look at, he says over and over the, lovely white spot on the pipe, obviously referring to Dunhill. So,
yeah.
Wow. Which in his honor, tonight, I'm actually with my hair in a hipster man bun, am smoking, my Dunhill pipe with my white spot here tonight. So,
so
A.A. Milne could be making fun of me, as we're,
I'd like to think that he is actively.
Yeah. In spirit, he's still doing it. He goes on though to talk a lot about, kind of that contrast. I'll just read a few lines from this article. Again, Smoking is a Fine Art by A.A. Milne. Only a British author could start something with a line like this. Quote, my first introduction to lady nicotine was at the innocent age of 8. And he goes on to talk about when he finds some unlit, you know, chewing tobacco laying around that he puts in his mouth and just starts gnawing on. But, you know, he goes on to Cambridge and talks about apparently there's some sophisticated pipe shop in that area at Cambridge. And, of course, all the prepsters that go there are, you know, really excited and, of course, want to look sophisticated and, you know, be identified with, you know, manhood and all these things. And so, you know, they've all selected, each one has a tobacco specially blended according to the color of his hair, his taste in reviews, and the locality in which he lives. And just goes on and on about kind of the snobbery of that. probably my favorite quote from this is, a pipe in the mouth makes it clear that there has been no mistake. You are undoubtedly a man. And so he just goes on and on about that. But it's pretty great, and I would definitely look it up if you get a chance.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, we'll even post that specifically to the Facebook page especially. But,
yeah,
you know, the witty nature of how he kind of depicts things is great. If you even think back, and I'm having you kind of close your eyes, think back to your days of Winnie the Pooh. If you recall the character of Piglet,
yeah.
The house.
I think I identified with him most, actually.
You know, I could probably see that a little bit. I could see that a little bit. But Piglet, his house, he had a sign by it that said "Trespassers Will." And
yep.
It was obviously a broken sign that, you know, the implication being trespassers will be shot.
Okay.
However, okay. Piglet explained it to say that the house was named for his grandfather, when that was his name, Trespassers Will.
Okay.
And he had two different names, and, you know, one was, Will, which was short for William. So Trespassers William was his name.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So he depicted things like that in kind of this, the way the world has been lived in an adult fashion. However, with this childhood look at how they might interpret the world, which was really, really great. And the nods and the winks that he gave throughout his writing was great. In fact, you know, the characters from Winnie the Pooh, from the 100-Acre Wood are all based off of his child, Christopher, and his childhood toys.
And so Christopher was his real child, and then he had, you know, the toys that he was most fond of that kind of made up the universe that became what Winnie the Pooh's.
Pretty much verbatim, man. All of the characters, you know, Tigger, Piglet, Kanga and Roo, these basically almost every single one of the characters from the 100-Acre Wood were actually toys that his child, Christopher played with. And even Winnie the Pooh. Now, Winnie the Pooh is kind of interesting because Winnie the Pooh was a bear.
Right.
And when purchased, it was an Edward bear. Like the bear's name was Edward. But kind of in the sense that, like,
okay.
I'll compare it to Mickey Mouse and I'll actually tie it back in.
Okay.
But if you were to like buy a Mickey Mouse doll, and then your child renames it something else.
Okay.
So like they bought an Edward bear.
Yeah.
But then they named it Winnie.
Okay.
Of course, Winnie was actually a real bear. In fact, the name was inspired by a Canadian black bear that was actually owned by the local zoo.
You know, I had heard that before.
Yeah.
That actually, and we may have even talked about that on the show before, that the bear was a real bear locally there from Canada, but they named it Winnie.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. A female bear.
Maybe after Winnipeg, which city in Canada?
Yeah. Oh, man.
I think that's right.
So definitely named after Winnipeg. So they saw Winnie at the zoo, and thus the name inspired the name for the Edward bear. And so the bear once named Edward became Winnie.
Yeah.
And Winnie the bear, Winnie the Pooh bear, was the inspiration for, of course, the fictional character.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not all of the characters were actually based off of Christopher's toys. Specifically, the characters of Rabbit and Owl were both actually...
They were based on a rabbit and an owl.
Well, I mean, yeah, obviously. But those were not characters that were based off of toys, nor was the later character added of Gopher. Do you remember Gopher?
I actually don't remember Gopher.
Okay, there's that classic story of when Winnie the Pooh goes to Rabbit's house and he eats too much honey.
Okay.
And he's trying to get out of the hole but he can't fit anymore because he's gotten so fat from eating all the honey.
I think I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. So then the gopher kind of pops up out of nowhere. He's got a little bit of a list.
Yeah.
Because he's teeth and everything.
Okay, okay.
And so he's trying to figure out, like, basically he's getting, like, this work commissioned for him to go and do this job in order to dig out poo. But anyway, the character of Gopher was actually added in by the Walt Disney Company once they acquired the rights to the character.
Okay.
Which
was much later, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
the family actually sold the rights, and at first they were getting royalties, and then later the Disney Company bought it for millions of dollars.
Because we think of Winnie the Pooh as like a Disney thing. I mean, we're this side of, you know, the 21st century,
absolutely.
So we think of it as a Disney thing. But, you know, these were short stories. These are stories written for kids that, you know, Milne passed away. His widow, if I'm correct, actually sold the rights, to someone who then sold them again. But eventually they wound up in Disney. And Disney, of course, made these incredible, timeless, you know, things that we remember and grew up with now.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, when Disney started first producing the, films, there was a little bit of flack, but from some of like the hardcore Winnie the Pooh fans, mm-hmm. that they felt the spirit of the bear hadn't fully been like carried on.
Yeah, you almost have to think like maybe similar to some of the stuff that's happened with Sherlock Holmes.
That's
like,
exactly what comes to mind. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Very similar there. But yeah, one way or the other, absolutely. Disney has turned Winnie the Pooh into a gold mine. This I find fascinating. They actually make just as much money off of Winnie the Pooh as a franchise and the merchandise and everything else that goes around it as they do with Mickey Mouse.
There's no way.
No, that is absolutely true. Like,
that's hard to believe. I mean, you think about how long Winnie the Pooh's been around, and I guess, you know, his appeal is so universal, but that's amazing. And all the, you know, merchandising that goes along with that, not just selling, you know, DVDs or anything like that, but you've got all these characters. I mean, I guess it just goes on and on.
It's crazy, man. Some fun facts too I want to mention is that the characters from the Hundred Acre Wood and you know Winnie the Pooh, Piglet, Eeyore, they all first appeared on television on NBC in the form of these little puppets.
Okay,
and it's actually if you can find images of this online, it's really interesting. They all look pretty similar to their original artistic rendering, except Eeyore in particular has like this neon blue mohawk.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I think they were going for like a blue motif because he's Eeyore and he's always sad. Yeah. And so, you know, blue goes along with that. But if you look at it, he looks like a rock star.
Right.
It's not quite.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah. It doesn't relate a lot. It's funny. Just talking about Eeyore, we've got a customer here at the Country Squire. It's been coming in for about 35 years. His name is Dr. Ramel Benjamin. He was a esteemed professor of sociology here at Jackson State, one of our local colleges. And it was funny, when I started working here, he would always come in. He comes in about three times a week to buy cigars. And when I started working here, Mrs. Reeves, who founded the shop, was here, obviously, and she would interact with Dr. Benjamin. And she was one of the most optimistic people I've ever met in my life. And he is, to this day, one of the most pessimistic people I've ever met in my life. And so she would always call him Eeyore, and that was kind of this thing. It was like, and he wore it as a badge of honor. He wears it as a badge of honor. Yeah. He's like, well, I mean, just, you know, I'm never upset with, you know, the negativity in life, because I always take the negative side. And I'm like, well, well, that's all. It was just so funny. Miss Gwen would always take this really, you know, hard line with him, just like, you need to try to think more positively. But, you know, he's still here. So
there you go.
Yeah. It's Dr. Benjamin Eeyore.
Well, somebody who takes things or took things a bit negatively is actually the inspiration for Christopher Robin, which is Christopher Milne. And, you know, he said of his father, this is actually a quote. He said he was upset by his father's success because he felt that he was climbing on my infant shoulders, that he had filched from me my good name, and left me nothing but empty fame.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow, that's amazing.
And this is, you know, this comes from the fact he was growing up, and as he was growing up, people would like quote the book to him, and he felt like they were kind of picking on him and that sort of thing.
Golly, think about being a child star, you know, in a modern day sitcom or something, growing up with that. But even worse, because it wasn't really even you. I mean, it was maybe stories about you, but yeah, that's difficult.
Yeah, I guess, man. I don't know if my parents had written a book, the Winnie the Pooh series, based off of me and my toys, then I'd kind of be honored, honestly.
Hey, but I bet when he inherited the rights to that, it was okay.
Right, it all came.
Which I hear that actually one of the last things I read on this was that the copyright to Winnie the Pooh runs out in 2026. And
that's 10 years.
That's 10 years. In my mind, I'm like, who determines these things? Like, what judge is sitting there being like, Winnie the Pooh is free trade at 2026? But like, does that mean at that point we can make a Winnie the Pooh blend and like not have to look over our shoulder?
Oh man, you could do like a honey blend.
You do a honey blend or a.
You could probably do like a Milne blend or something of that nature.
Yeah. Yeah.
So here's the thing. You mentioned the copyright. It's an interesting thing. The whole legal team over at Disney is very much on top of that because most of the characters they have are the longest, like the oldest characters in the history of the country. And so they're very protective of those characters. And so when things start getting close to public domain, that's when the lawyers show up and start pushing things further and further.
Yeah. Back. Yeah.
So my guess is that even though the copyright is not up till 2026.
Right.
Maybe push back a couple more decades as we get closer. Just a hunch.
Rabid attorneys protecting the legacy of Winnie the Pooh.
Look, I'm sure that our good friend Brian Levine has got some great thoughts to share on that as well as a Disney aficionado, and probably knows a lot more about the copyrights that surround a lot of their characters from that end. But that's A.A. Milne.
It was good. Yeah, it's always interesting to dig into the fact, you know, I'm struggling tonight with my vocabulary. I apologize.
That's like you struggling with your vocabulary. It still puts you eons above the average individual, namely myself. No,
the average individual named Bo. No, not at all. It's always interesting to delve into the lives of pipe smokers that we all know and love, but don't necessarily think a lot about the intricacies of their story or kind of what they're involved in professionally or their personal life or any of that stuff. It's with Milne, there's not a lot to be said about his love of what type of tobacco or what type of pipe. We do know he made fun of Dunhill smokers, which might make you to believe he was a Sheraton guy. You just don't know.
Oh man,
you could put a whole like backstory on that kind of thing. But
right.
But regardless, we know he's a pipe smoker, and we know he certainly his pipe smoking rhythm was. Not just for show, but a big part of his daily experience.
That's
it's fun just to see, what he was able to produce in light of that.
You know, I think that's fine, though. I mean, not every single pipe smoker from history is going to have, that kind of level of always associate on their deathbed. Remember, tell them I always smoked three nuns and this exact shape pipe. You know what I mean? Like, not everybody's going to have that.
Are you sure C.S. Lewis didn't say that? I think he may have said that.
And was inscribe that, was it on it? The back of the wardrobe.
Was that the end of Screwtape Letter? I think it was in there somewhere.
It was somewhere in there. But I mean, like, think about it. Right now, there's hundreds and hundreds of hours of you and me discussing specifically pipes and pipe tobacco. I define somebody to talk of us as if they know. They could talk about you because you've got your Bing's favorite. But talk about me, you have no idea. Like, they would say, like, well, he smoked a lot of stuff. We can't really say what he normally smoked. And he had a lot of pipes. Don't really know which one we would necessarily say is his favorite.
You know, it's really is funny. I'm just now. I guess I've never really thought of it, Bo, but kind of a existential experience here. like this can never be deleted from the internet. You and I have like hundreds of hours of content, over 2 years worth of us, coming on here and bantering about things we love, pipe tobacco, pipes, and culture, and all these other things. And like, man, my kids are gonna hear this one day. I better clean it up.
My kids heard it in the other room back when we were starting.
They did.
Out.
They like. I mean, they request Uncle JD now.
That's right.
And it's kind of terrifying.
Where's John David?
Where's John David?
Well, I'll tell you where John David is. He's right here, wishing that he could be smoking a Missouri Meerschaum pipe.
I sure do, man. Especially that Diplomat Corn Cob from our friends at Missouri Meerschaum.
Dude, the Diplomat Corn Cob, the apple shape specifically, that is the pipe that is bringing you this wonderful episode right now. We want to thank them for sponsoring this episode, but let's tell to you a little bit about the Diplomat pipe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things I like about Missouri Meerschaum is that you've got, they'll take these different styles and these different shapes, and then they'll also make it so that if you prefer a straight pipe or a bent pipe, doesn't matter. As long as you like the bowl, you can kind of custom find exactly what fits your needs.
Kind of plug and play.
The yep. Diplomat Apple is one that I really like because I'm kind of a sucker for the Apple shape in
yeah.
particular.
Yeah. We've got several folks at the shop that constantly request an Apple pipe. It's for some reason, it's just one of those, you know, hardcore, you know, if you're sold out to it, you're sold out to it. And the Diplomat is perfect for those people if they're looking for a pipe at a reasonable price that's going to smoke great.
Yeah, no, it's a great pipe. Check it out, Missouri Meerschaum. I also want to encourage you, if you happen to have one of their Diplomat series pipes, go ahead and take a picture of yourself, tweet that into us. We'll retweet it out. We really love it whenever y'all do that. We really love Missouri Meerschaum for helping us bring the show to you, and we love you guys for helping them, and it all goes around like that.
For the helping them help us. Thank you very much.
Pipe question of the week.
All right, pipe question of the week. Pipe question of the week is brought to us by Orlick Dark Strong Kentucky.
Man, that stuff is so good. We were talking about it earlier. You open the tin on that, and there's that, you know, just incredible aroma that comes out. And I think you had some trivia on that, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, man, a little tobacco trivia. That aroma that you're picking up is actually specifically brown sugar.
Yeah, Dark Strong Kentucky, you think, you look at it, and the Dark Strong Kentucky from Orlick, it kind of favors bacon, and then you smell this brown sugar, and it's almost like this, you know, cured sugar bacon that, like, you'd get at Thanksgiving or something. And, of course, after you smoke it and taste it, it's just delicious.
You have bacon at Thanksgiving?
Dude, bacon is appropriate at any time.
So is Orlick Dark Strong
so
Kentucky.
So is Orlick Dark Strong Kentucky. That's exactly right.
That's right. So check it out. And hey, by the way, if you are smoking it, let us know. Hashtag DSK. Actually, I probably shouldn't say that.
Is that a thing?
Well, I don't know. See, that's the thing.
That might be a thing for something else.
You gotta double check your hashtags. So be careful with
it. But hashtag Dark Strong Kentucky. We know that's safe.
We know that's safe.
And like all the products from our friends at Orlick, we definitely believe in them. And if you're looking for something that has the Orlick quality, but, you know, is a little stronger, got that robust kind of smoky Kentucky fire cured taste to it, this is definitely the tobacco for you.
All right, man. Pipe question written in from Dale D on mm-hmm. Facebook. It says, is there any way to estimate the moisture content of pipe tobacco? I've heard of the pinch test where you pinch a bit between your thumb and your forefinger, and if it holds together, it's too moist. If it falls apart immediately, it's too wet. But if it sticks a little, then comes apart, it's just right. All right, so really good question.
Interesting.
Here.
Yeah.
How do you estimate the moisture of your pipe tobacco?
Yeah, well, a great question. And you know, I've heard a lot of different schools of thought on this. I mean, honestly, I think Dale's description of, you know, what you do there to figure out if the moisture is appropriate is a good one. You know, when you come in contact with pipe tobacco, and you know, if it has the consistency of sawdust when you rub it between your Ooh. Fingers, like, you know, something's up, uh-huh. right? I mean, there's no surefire way to do this. It's kind of the same principle to packing and tamping a pipe. A lot of folks are like, well, you have to do it with this many pinches and this pressure, and then you pull out your caliper to make sure the width is right, and then you do it again. Like, no, like, you get it. You get your own system, you know? So everyone gets their own system with the moisture content as well. And some people actually prefer their tobacco a little drier, which is interesting. So,
that sounds crazy to me.
It's that sense of, you know, when you pick it up though, and it kind of falls apart, and you can hear it clink as it hits the table again. You know, it's probably a little too dry, but I like that concept of, you know, mashing it together. It sticks for just a minute and then falls apart some. I think that's probably good. The only thing about this, again, is that everyone has their own, you know, appropriate consistency for pipe tobacco. Some people, like pipe tobacco to be a little more wet. Some people like certain kinds of tobacco to be wet. For instance, you might like an aromatic to be more on the moist side. But then you might like a Virginia tobacco to be on the drier side, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I think there's a balance there, but, you honestly, again, with like so much with the pipe world, you have to find your own equilibrium and just stick with it. So, for me, I'm one of those people that, you know, prefers a tobacco that tends to be a little on the drier side, but not bone dry like some of those. You know, some moisture content is nice, but, you know, as far as figuring out a proper moisture level and then assessing that, you know, when I touch a tobacco, I don't want my hands to necessarily come away with any kind of residue on it. And so, you know, unless you're just smoking a really a really cased aromatic tobacco.
I was about to say, there's some out there that's going to happen no matter
what.
Yeah,
and it is. Like, we, you know, our some of our best-selling tobaccos here at the shop, like Old Toby or Treasure Island or Saratoga, you know, it's got that consistency where, you know, it's the casing is so generous on it, and that's what makes it such a good tobacco, that it is going to have that. But, you know, generally on a lot of tobaccos, particularly those that are unaromatic, you don't want something that's really going to stick with you. You want something that, you know, gives the impression that it's fresh, but not goopy or syrupy. Think about when you open a tin of Full Virginia Flake from Sam Gayweth, or for that matter, any tin from Sam Gayweth. And this goes true as well for some tins from Mac Baron, and other companies as well. But you have there's a dryness there. There's a moisture there that when you open it, the flakes almost push back when you press them. You can really tell there's a thickness there that's due to the moisture content.
Kind of like medium rare meat type
deal.
Yeah,
okay. I could see that. And so you can tell after you tear a, you know, flake tobacco apart, just if it's going to be too wet to smoke. And again, all this, you know, there's no, like, nothing I can tell you to say, if you see this, then it means this. But it just comes from experience. With me, I'm always going to err on the side of I'd like it a little drier, because I can add more moisture to it later if I need to, essentially by, you know, my goofy little trick that I've learned from our friend Russ, just breathing into the bowl some. It's always easier, though, for me to get a drier pipe tobacco lit than a more moist one. So, but yeah, I think Dale, your, you know, track on that, you know, kind of your strategy for that to, you know, see if it sticks together and then falls apart, I think that's great.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned, not trying to get the residue on your fingers. And, this Saturday, somebody came by the shop and asked me, you know, what do I smoke? And I thought, I smoke it all. Like, I don't have, like,
you really do though. Bud.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like, all right, what am I in the mood for? And so I told him, I was like, well, and I recommended two tobaccos for him. One, which is Rivendell, which I said, you know,
yeah,
excellent smoke. Yeah. You know, it's pretty much, it will not offend anybody. Almost everybody who smokes it loves Rivendell to some extent.
Yeah.
And then the other is Treasure Island.
Treasure Island. Yeah.
As I said, you know, that is the one thing I was just thinking about fishing. I was like, whenever I go fishing, I always get Treasure Island. I probably shouldn't though. Because what ends up happening with Treasure Island is it does end up being, for my money anyway, has been kind of a wetter tobacco because of just, it is very flavored.
it's very heavily cased. That's right. Rivendell is one of those tobaccos. And of course, there's other tobaccos on the market much like it. Take, for instance, Nutty Cut from our friends at Peterson. But, you know, these are tobaccos that are well done because the casing is certainly present, but it's so muted that it smokes clean. You still feel comfortable putting it in almost any pipe. You know, there's the McClelland aromatics are much like that too. You know, you feel comfortable putting them in any pipe. So, you know, if you are averse to those really, really moist tobaccos, you know, you might want to steer clear of those and go to something that, you know, is still aromatic but has a nice casing on it that, you know, leaves you with the flavor. I just tend to shy away from tobaccos that leave the residue on my hands, but yet some of the best-selling tobaccos out there are those that do have that generous casing, and that makes them so, you know, what they are, and they're so good.
He did walk out with a couple of pounds of
Treasure Island. Yeah, yes. Good. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, that made the day. Good. I'm all for that. The heavier the casing, the better.
Great question, Dale D. We appreciate it. Hey, if you got a pipe question of the week, send it in. You can Facebook, tweet us, or you can send it in csr@podastery.com.
Quick fire with the Squire.
All right, man, quick fire questions.
Bring the heat.
This actually comes in from Steve Bentham. And Steve, he's from Madison, Wisconsin. He's actually sent in a couple of weeks worth, and he's got them all tiered out based on in kind of a theme. Mm-hmm. Type deal, as people like to do.
Okay.
So the first one for today is going to be a camping theme.
Camping. Okay, something I'm so familiar with. I'm more familiar with it than Mega Man.
Camping theme. Camper or tent?
Tent.
Got to go tent.
Yeah, I mean, there's a time and a place for a camper, and it's when you're tailgating at a football game.
Oh, okay, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, but like, you know, if you're camping, you want a tent.
I feel towards campers as you feel towards like budget hotel rooms, which is like,
where is this going?
Well, you and I, we've traveled from time to time.
Yeah.
And I remember you saying once that like when you're in a hotel, Like everything just feels kind of slightly not right. You know what I mean? It's like everything's kind of built there for your comfort, and yet you don't quite feel comfortable.
No, that's right.
I kind of feel like that way with campers.
I stand by that.
It's like everything about the camper is kind of built for your convenience and for you to be comfortable, but it's just not
quite there. Look at that stove. It's so cute. It's made for a troll.
Right. No, I mean, it's great. Not judging campers. I just, you know, if I'm out in the woods, I'll be out in the woods. If I'm in a house, I'll be in a house.
Yeah, okay. All right. Tent people we are.
S'mores or pudgy pies? I do not know what a pudgy pie is.
Okay. I don't know what a pudgy pie is either, but if it...
I'm thinking moon pie?
See, I don't know. If he's comparing it to s'mores, that means it's probably... A pudgy pie must be some kind of dessert type thing. When I think of pudgy pie, I think like maybe it's like a pot pie kind of thing. And if it were like a pot pie, then I'd have to go with that. But if it's a dessert kind of thing, I'm skeptical. What are you getting on our friends at Google here?
It looks like this is so apparently this is a thing. I guess it's like a sandwich type deal.
It looks like a piece of bark. You know what, Bo? S'mores. I'm going to go with s'mores.
S'mores.
Hey, who can beat a graham cracker, milk chocolate, and a giant marshmallow?
Man. Plus, I think pudgy pie must be regional, and we're not in the region for it.
Yeah.
Fishing or hiking?
Oh, hiking.
Fishing all the way, man.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you can do that. That's fine. I don't, you know... I'm such a eco-friendly person. I don't like to kill fish.
That is not true.
That's horse crap. Yeah,
I've seen you kill a cat. Well, no, I shouldn't.
No, that's not true.
That's not true. That didn't happen. I have heard stories.
I've never killed a cat.
I'm just saying.
My roommate may have maced one time to try to get it out of our garden. But
we just lost all of our cat listeners.
I'm just saying, and I didn't even do that. but anyway, I have to go with hiking.
All right, definitely fishing. Campfire songs or campfire storytelling? That's a good question.
I think I got to go with storytelling. Mm. Because when do you actually tell stories? Like there's not, like, we sing songs occasionally. There are different opportunities to sing songs. But, like when do we actually have an opportunity to tell a story? You know what I mean? Like, that happens at a place like the Country Squire because we're a pipe shop and that's what people do.
And
but
you
like
your mini campfire.
And you have
right
a mini
there.
Campfire in your hand at any given point in time. But like, man, we're not people that tell stories anymore. And like when you set up a campfire, like, I don't know, that seems like an appropriate place to like bust out a really good story, whether it's true or not.
Man.
I don't know. I'm gonna go with story.
I was gonna say song, but you've convinced me. I'm gonna go story all
I
the way.
I converted you.
Well done. And then finally, campground with a group or wilderness with a buddy.
Wilderness with a buddy. There's that sense of like kind of being scared and on the edge, you know, like maybe we'll get lost.
Yeah.
And maybe they'll never find us until they find that bear that has us in its belly.
that eat us. Can it be like a wildernessy campground type deal? Like, I don't want to just out in the open or anything like that, but I don't know. I don't want to be eaten by a bear.
No, that's fair. Wildernessy campground type deal. That's what Bo picked.
That's what I picked. How about that for riding the fence?
Well done.
All right. Excellent. Quick fire questions. And, man, we're going to be covered for the next 2 or 3 weeks here with these. So, that's awesome.
That's
great. That doesn't mean don't send them in. Send them in csr@podastery.com.
Your thoughts, your comments, listener feedback.
Listener feedback. This week, we've got some great listener feedback. Got a YouTube comment specifically in relation to last week's episode on cherry tobacco. You want to take that one?
Yeah, absolutely. This comes from Ralph Burns on YouTube, and he says, I'm a big fan of Peter Stokeby Cherry Bon Bon. I found that it does not bite, and it has two tastes. The first taste is a deep, rich flavor of cherry, and later on, a delicious chocolate flavor sets in all the way to the bottom. This is my go-to night blend after a rich dinner, much like dessert. Yum, yum. Thanks so much, Ralph. That actually sounds really great.
That is awesome.
Yeah, I might have to check that out.
By the way, Portland Paul on Twitter tweets in, says that we should do bacon and tobacco pairings. Yes.
Does bacon pair poorly with anything?
I mean, that's just all the bacon.
Yeah.
All the bacon. Like,
I guess you'd have different types of bacon that you could pair with different types of things. You've got, like, you know, the bacon that's cooked real crispy and the bacon that's
so the style in which
more
it is
chewy.
Cooked.
You could have the sugar-cured bacon, the bacon that looks like dark, strong Kentucky.
Bacon-wrapped bacon.
Bacon-wrapped bacon.
Mmm. We also got one in from Pastor Pipes, who
I'm really
says,
hungry.
I know, now am I. We gotta finish this thing up so I can get some food. Pastor Pipes writes in and says, okay, Bo, I triple dog dare you not to bring up Star Wars for just one episode. Can you do it? That's what I thought. Great show, as always. Peace.
Good job for bringing up Star Wars, Bo, by reading that.
I mean, I was about to say, joke's on you, Pastor Pipes. You're the one that brought it up this episode, so there you go. I guess I did reference the Binks Blood earlier on, but that was a callback.
Oh, you did.
That was a callback.
Nah, it still counts, though, dude.
Binks Blood is a Country Squire Radio thing, not a Star Wars thing.
Okay.
It's part of the lore of the show.
I triple dog dare you to not say anything about it. The thing is, as soon as you didn't, I would.
How much you want to bet? Next episode.
Are you about to mute this so that people don't know how much we're betting?
I was adjusting your levels.
No, I'm not going to bet because you actually might do it.
No, I could do it.
You're crafty like that.
I could do it.
You're crafty like that. I won't think you can do something, and then you're like, oh, look at Bo.
He actually
people
did
think
it.
That about me all the time.
Yeah, man. And then finally, we had a great iTunes review. You want to read that one from us?
Yeah, from... is it BB?
That's the one.
Okay. Yeah, this one from iTunes, BB and BC. He says, outstanding. I'm a new pipe smoker and ran across this podcast. The two hosts have a great chemistry and a love for the pipe and tobacco. The show itself is full of great information of said topic and, most importantly, is very well produced. Hey, look at that, Bo. The sound quality is outstanding and as a podcaster myself, I really appreciate that. Keep those episodes coming, fellas. Thank you so much, BB and BC. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yep. Look, that feedback is great. You know, when we switch to the you know, doing things inside the shop instead of not inside the studio, I've been nervous about that. So getting that kind of feedback that y'all are enjoying the show, that it's still living up to the quality, that man, that just means a lot to me.
What's kind of your main concern about that? You know, we were, you know, dead set on having a podcast that sounded really well done professionally. Mm. And we didn't want to sacrifice that coming offsite out of Podastery Studios and into the Squire. And man, it's been a blessing being here. We can, you know, interact with the shop and with the products and tobaccos and, you know, just in ways that we haven't been able to. But man, hats off to you for keeping the quality
great.
Yeah.
It's been good. And, you know, the great thing is you can actually enjoy it as we do record it, and
that's right.
By tuning in live. We do broadcast live every single Monday night. This evening, we entered into some situation that we kind of entered into last week with the mute button, but typically speaking...
Oh, that mute button.
Per capita, you could generally tune in and hear everything perfectly fine.
Right.
And of course, that is by tuning in here at 6:30 Central Time, 4:30 Pacific, 7:30 Eastern. That is when you can tune in on Monday nights. Please join us and engage with us. We love getting these tweets in from the live listeners who can also help us with wonderful tech troubleshooting when that occurs. You can, of course, tweet into the show at Squire Radio. You can follow us throughout the week. You can follow me at The Real Bo York.
I'm at John David Cole, or you can get us at the shop at @_CountrySquire.
And links to all of that good stuff, including links to the shop, links to our sponsors, links to our Facebook page, all of that can be found at CountrySquireRadio.com. All right, man.
Dude, this was fun. We talked about A.A. Milne. We talked about Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah,
International
man.
Pipe Smoking Day. I had a really good evening.
It's a full day.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I'm going to celebrate this by... I'm smoking Green Dragon, by the way, in my Dunhill here. It's very good.
That's good, man.
It's very good. So I'm going to go home and smoke Green Dragon, which is a pipe tobacco. And not anything else.
Hey, you're the one that named it.
I did. It's really awful.
You got no one to blame for that one but yourself.
I think I'm going to turn this International Pipe Smoking Day into a week and go home and enjoy this again.
Hey, that sounds like a plan, man. Well, hey, let's go have a night.
See you, brother.
You've been listening to Country Squire Radio, a member of the Podastery Network. For more information on this and other shows, please visit podastery.com.